I was doing a reading at the Ranala Arts Festival a while ago, and I was all the way in the back, just like that, and it was a really dark room, and I grabbed my poems out of my bag and kind of crowd surfed my way to the front, and then when I got up to the front, I opened the pages, and it was the Trinity College Fitness Center timetable. It wasn't my poems at all, and there's only so long that you can kind of read off the timetable before I think people start thinking you're being like a bit opaque. So I checked this time. This is called Confidant. We've had pints enough between us to crowd this small table with our empty columns. It's late enough to say what we're thinking, as you do on nights such as these. I start. So what's the deal with you and... She says, don't ask me. Don't ask me what I know you're going to ask. And I understand I plunged up to my elbows in a real messy question, hauled it dripping onto the table where it sits helplessly splatted among the glasses. I know how an answer can define things or strip them bare, but it still stings to go unconfided in, to leave the answer empty of any weight and guilty for the question. I want to know if they went home. I want to know if she loves him. I want to know if he calls her when it suits him. And I wonder if the hunger of my knowing is why she doesn't tell me. So I have one that's a bit more spoken wordy. It's not the best in terms of nice phrases, but it is the best in terms of being real pissed off. I don't usually do poems that are like this, but I had a mentor at Dublin who is very well known literarily, and he was a great mentor for a while until he like very abruptly wasn't. And you know, there's this phrase in French. Well, somebody told me there is. I'm just taking the word for it. That this phrase called staircase wit. I don't know if anybody knows what that is.
Spirit escalator.
Yeah.
Spirit
escalator. It means like when you think of the perfect thing to say when you're already walking down the stairs out of the room. But the nice thing about being a poet is you get to stand in front of a microphone after the fact. So this is called the opposite of a thank you. And it's a totally true story. I just made it more poemy. He sits across the dining table, says, I find you hard to read, he says. Sometimes I think you love me, and then you don't seem interested. He tells me he's been vexed by my mixed messages. He tells me how he loves sex with women. What does your wife think of them? I stutter. Oh, she doesn't like it much, he mutters, but I'm a natural flirt. And if I'm doing the dirt, she knows I just love when two people meet, says the man with grandkids past their first kiss. I can be very discreet. Then he leans in, all serious and insistent, says, I've got a lot of contacts in the literary world. But I don't help people who are distant. No, he didn't! But he did, and God forbid that stinger in this chat. He's got a cautionary about a contender who got wary and went elsewhere. What a pity. Couldn't help her. Of course, you've never heard of her. And now he's here to sort me out. So, Aaron, give us a shout whenever you're ready. And I'm already unsteady when he goes like this. The responses clog in my throat as he sits across me with a soggy sandwich and takes my silence for consideration. And my deliberation was, do I split and leave the bill or calmly spill my soda down his head? But I couldn't meet his eyes instead. Now I sit across him with my head bowed and my shoulders risen. And on a scale of one to criminal, I guess it's on the minor end. But then I wonder if he likes my discomfort, if he's gotten any converts, how frequently has all this worked? And I wonder why I can talk the talk until I actually need to say shit. why I can walk the walk only in retrospect, why I can populate my mind with 100 perfect lines only when the moment's past. And as the waiter asks who's paying, I'm sitting quiet in the din of a great disheartening. And in the face of his gaze and all the things I don't say, I still worry about how mad I'll make him for reciting his lines out here verbatim, and that is the most disheartening thing of all. So if I seem freaked, he takes my quietness for weakness. It's just that I'm distinctly fatigued by this tired casting couch cliche as he sits across from me in some hipster Dublin cafe to say that the keys to the kingdom are down his jeans. So this is the opposite of a thank you letter. It's a manifesto for better, that we can be true with all these sordid things, can lift each other up without any strings, and we can be more than where we've come from, with men with power and women with none. So I'll speak after the fact and hope that I'm heard, because all I have is words, and he's got a lot of contacts in the literary world. He was not very happy with me about writing that poem and putting it up on YouTube, but I had about 20 different women and well-known women, like well-known people, like big award writer people and so on, come up to me, usually kind of half lit at launches and stuff, and be like, I know exactly that poem's about, it's this guy. And I go, no, not him. The next person would come up and be like, it's this guy, and how did we do? And I go, oh God, it's not him either. I don't know what's going on, guys. But it's pretty demoralizing.
Those are his connections.
Anyway. Okay. Okay, now for an abrupt change in tone. You ready? This is called The Fireman, and I work with somebody who's a fireman in Dublin, and fireman, paramedic, and so on, and just listening to him talking about his life. And I wrote this poem, and hopefully I'll get enough balls to show it to him someday, but that day has not yet arrived. The Fireman. He can be forgiven for the jolt of adolescent exhilaration that comes still from running traffic lights, as the world pauses and parts for his swirling colors and the parabola of his bawling siren. He can be forgiven for that mild thrill. He mentions, as an aside, most firemen die before 60, just around retirement, as though it's safety that deflates them, the adrenaline and injection they smother without. He can be forgiven for laughing too loud on nights off at the pub with his mates. His lungs have hauled the same cargo of smoke as theirs. He's mastered, as they did, the whiplash of chessboards and video games snapped into panicked sprint and muscle. He can be forgiven for keeping it light at lunch. How can he explain that heat, listening to the creak of the floor for discordant notes of collapse? Antidote, the drape of families on pavement, faces lit by all they own. He can be forgiven for refusing to elaborate the infernos of his daily grind, for keeping his witness to himself, what it means to be present at life's cracking, what it means to be a remedy that's very often too late. I actually love when people clap in between poems, because I'm used to doing spoken word. And it took a while to learn kind of the more traditional structures, and the first time I was like, oh my God, they hate it, they're not. You're just doing spoken word stuff a lot at festivals and things, you get used to that kind of instant gratification. And I'm really excited to be here. This is like my first like real gig in Cork. I did the Independence Festival this summer in Mitchelstown, but it was like me saying poems to like one guy who was like passed out on yolks lying on the ground. So this one really counts as the first one. Anyway. So I spent 2.5 years, I've been in Dublin for 6 years, or in Ireland for 6 years, but I spent 2.5 years living in a one-room cabin on a cliff in Wicklow overlooking the Irish Sea. Which got to be pretty lonely after a while, like, who knew, you know? 3,000 miles away from your family in a cabin by yourself in the middle of nowhere by the endless open ocean. But I wrote this poem about it, and it was kind of an ideal place to be a poet, really, kind of art-directed for being all poetic. So it's called Late Night in a Cabin on the Head. This wedding cake was a waste of money, my mate says, back in daily life after the big event. He hacked me off a slice and wrapped it. Now the moon's pale glare is pooling on the floor of this room that smells of old dinner. My own small chaos of noise, the only thing rearranging stifling air. I leave it to sit on the steps before the oxygen rush of the distant sea. It's freezing, and that second step is useless. I swear to God, I'm gonna break my ankle some morning. But just now, it's holding firm. And I'm loving that waste of money now. Forked out of this dry husk of foil, the white ganache stiff at the edges, watching the moon's milky reflection, a wavering slick on the sea. My breath in the cold is a lid off a pot on the boil, the steam rising into endless air. It's easy to begin thinking, there's no one in the world to witness this but me. That everyone I ever gave my heart needed me until they didn't. That there's nothing moving at all in the world right now but the sea and me. But sitting hunched against the cold with a mouthful of sweetness and shivering, that moon and its reflection. Thank you.
Thanks.
So I have some Appalachian poems for you guys, three more poems, and they're all based on like being back in the mountains, which remind me in some ways of Ireland. I went to West Cork, to Drimaleek, to the stations, which a lot of people in Dublin don't believe still exist outside of like a Maeve Binchy novel. But they took me down and they thought it was going to be like this huge cultural shock. But except for the Catholic bit, it was like essentially like being back in the Appalachian Mountains, back in the South. So that was kind of cool. So this is called Small Town Synesthesia. The gasoline fumes shine behind his eyes at the pump. And when he balances the till at the end of the day, the numbers and letters throb in their rainbow glow when the numbers align. His mouth is salty from the streetlight's pale haze at the parking lot hangouts and the conversation the same since high school. The scuffle of sneakers flood his throat with lemon, and the cool of the can in his hand rings out in a minor chord. The bloom of color buried in his eyes dims as quick as the door chime in the town's only restaurant, where he is known as soon as he walks in. He is alone in his kind. In the flex and twist of his iridescent mind, he wonders what shapes the train whistle makes when it blows in other places. And this one's called Moonshine, which is like a delicious form of poaching. I've never actually had poaching. Somebody told me that if you drink it, then it crystallizes in your stomach, and then when you drink water again, it like re-alcoholates.
This is true.
But I've had plenty of moonshine. And I sent this poem to my dad, and he'd be kind of artsy, but he just sent it back with like tips on how to make moonshine better. That was useless. Moonshine. Apples ground scattered as if thrown, sides gone soft, wormholes like cigarette burns. We gather them, shake sugar and yeast until the pulp bubbles in gastric ferment. We wait for a sunny day and begin early. Haul deep pots and propane up the hill, back where the rain-rubbed mountains meet. We connect the pipes and flick a lighter. The mixture comes alive over the hiss as we tamp the top down, screw the coil, run cold creek water over the metal's rising heat. The steam scatters crawdads and salamander. We catch the first drips, clear as rainwater, as the boiling mash breathes alcohol and the copper pipes release their slow weeping that burns cold on the fingers, blue in a flame. And with a sip, it sears a line down the esophagus, pulls an instinctual cringe, the pursed lip, double chin, the performance of the exhale, the cuss, the purity of such rot, the life in Appalachian cliche. What proof comes from this task? What marvels come from decay? What proof am I, a distiller in the boiling? The hills soar far away, trees sentient with wind as the glass jar fills. We screw the lid. The horizon lifts across the valley. Its image refracts and bends when we hold it to the light. So this is my last one, and thank you so much for being good, such good listeners and for clapping in between the poems. Just helps me ego-wise. So where I grew up in the mountains, we spend a lot of time around a bonfire. And there's a game you can play, usually when you've had a few drinks, where you can take a hot coal out of the fire, and if you hit it off your hands fast enough, it doesn't burn you, and you can kind of throw it back and forth to people. And it looks really good. Occasionally it doesn't hurt you, but it's really cool. Yeah. But my brother taught me how to play it. So this is about that, and it's for my brother, and it's called Hymn to the Reckless. Together we throw flame into orbit, the frantic patter, the volley, the hit. From afar, it's just stars come down to flip. We bend quick to the coals and pull flame into flight, a delirious sleight of hands with a teaspoon of light. Once one caught between my fingers and seared, and that night I wrapped my aching hand around cold beer. We're boozy folk heroes performing incredible feats, craft exquisite trajectories with arms full of heat. Look, the arc as he sends it hurtling toward me, bending with some eccentric choreography. We burn. Our power to drag a new comet trail across the evening, a hymn to the reckless. So breathless as it falls to earth, the air singeing, we smolder. Gods of her own solstice and solace, there's solace in this insane game and being the wild ones who manhandle coals from the flames and make them dance. He catches behind the back. He's a one-man eclipse of the sun. Lays cursive lines across your eyelids, even once you've closed them. With a tap, 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 it comes flying to me. Oh God, I got it. Lightning, quick layup, I shot it. Always skyward. We marvel at our savage skill, at what we've harnessed. Sleep hard with sooty hands as flames peel thoughts unvarnished. One night in the smoke, with his throat full, he turned, stilled, confessed. You know, I always thought they loved you the best. How long has he held that pressed tight in his palm as it scorched him? Brave in the dim to declench that fist from the ember within to emit what forges us. That gentle soul who can cast flame to the rim of the sky and the ember. Exposed to air, it glows, it catches, it dies, it passes. Toss it here. We'll pass it back and forth until it's ashes.
Woo! Yeah. Thank you. Woo!